As some of you know, my amazing wife, Alina, was born in Bucharest, Romania. And she was born, and then her early life, when she was two, her family immigrated to Israel. And so when she was growing up when she was going to elementary school in Israel, she would speak Hungarian or Romanian at home, depending on the grandmother who was staying with her, and then learned Hebrew in school. And there's a lot, there's like a gazillion stories out of that. But basically, when she was about 8 years old, her family immigrated to the United States. And Alina didn't know very much English before doing that. As you can imagine, an eight-year-old doesn't really study that all. But there was, you know, American popular culture is all over the world. I remember hearing stories about how big Dallas was in Israel. that was a giant thing, and that was this conception of Texas. That's what Texas is Dallas. And I think before she moved here, when she was older, it was like the only two things in Texas were Dallas, the TV show, and Marfa, the art destination. But she stayed here despite that for many years, so I really appreciate that. But so before she learned English, her parents played a lot of American pop music and English pop music. They played like the Beatles and other songs like that. But there was one song that she fixated on as a young girl, and one song that really was where she learned her first words of English. And we'll see when you catch it. Just a little bit of it. I'm not going to sing it. I'm just going to. I would break down crying. No April rain, no flowers bloom, no wedding Saturday within the month of June. But what it is something true, made up of these three words, which I must say to you. I just called to say I love you. I just called to say how much I care. I just called to say I love you, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart. Which is this—it's this amazing. You can't make it up. That these are the first three words my wife learned of English was "I love you," but she learned it before she knew what it meant. And so, as I understand it, when she would go to elementary school in Ohio, she would tell people "I love you" because those were the words of English she knew. But it fits so much with the Christian life that so often we say the words "I love you" before understanding what they mean. And that we can see it's a good thing to say, but we don't know it deep in our heart what it means, what it can mean, and what it should mean. And we don't know how to even put it into practice. The Methodist movement began in the 1730s, really, after John Wesley basically read this report about a renewal movement in New England from Jonathan Edwards. And he was like, hey, this is a great idea. Why don't we start this here? And so he started open-air preaching. And part of that, he would preach in front of the coal mines and the tin mines, as I mentioned last week. He would preach on the street corners. He would preach outside of churches that wouldn't let him preach inside the doors. So he was like, okay, I'll just preach right here. And he would share the good news of Jesus Christ. He would tell people that they are loved. He would tell people they are forgiven. But after a while, he realized this wasn't going very far. Eventually, he would write this down. And someone asked him, is it advisable to preach as many places as we can without forming any societies? And Wesley said, by no means. We have done this before for a considerable time, and it never worked. There is scarce fruit remaining of it. The seed fell by the wayside. Which is, you remember the parable of the sower. The sower who scatters the seed, and he scatters the seed on the road, and it's eaten by the crows. He scatters the seed in the thorns, and you can't get it. But then he scatters it in the good soil, and that is where it is fruitful. He needed to find that good soil where the seeds could grow. It reminded him of the epistle of James, where James says to be doers of the word and not just hearers only, and with this great metaphor. For people who hear the word and do not do it are like someone who looks at their face in a mirror, turns away and forgets what he looks like. And that's what we all are when we hear something and we don't put it into action. When we listen and we don't respond, it's like, you know, we remember what they look like. It's like when you meet someone for the first time, and then you don't get their name, and then 2 weeks later, You see them again, but you don't remember their name because you weren't focused on them. It was just in passing by. So Wesley put this method together called class meetings and band meetings. It was a way to help build good soil for people. It was a way to help people to put into practice those words, "I love you." To put into practice what it means to be a child of God. To help and stand in solidarity with each other as you're doing this. And so he basically wanted to try and build up a society that looks like what it means to love the Lord with all your heart and your soul and your mind and love your neighbor as yourself. We know this is what we should do, but what does that look like? How are we to start? John Wesley wrote that for a Methodist, because a lot of people were like, "What's a Methodist?" A lot of people today are like, "What's a Methodist?" And he said, the important thing about being a Methodist is not an opinions of any sort. It's not assenting to this or that. It's not a particular set of notions or a judgment. A Methodist has the mark of loving the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind, and loving your neighbor as yourself. But again, you get back to the trouble. Where do you start? Where do you begin? And so John Wesley put together what he called the general rules of the Methodist societies. Now, rules sometimes has a harsh tone today, especially school starting this week, that we think about rules in school, and a rule is something you do or you don't do. If you don't follow the rule, you get a consequence. If you do follow the rule, you might get a little gold star, hopefully. I like gold stars, they're great. But that's not what Wesley was talking about with rules. A rule is a measurement. A rule is like a ruler. It's trying to see how long something is or how big something is. The general rules were a way to measure how we are doing in loving the Lord our God with all our heart and our soul and our strength. A rule was a way to measure how we are doing with loving our neighbor as ourselves. Because we know this is something we should do, but it's tricky. Love is a tremendous concept. It takes a lifetime to understand what it means, even more than that. But we have to start somewhere. So let's go back to the reading of Leviticus, the reading from today, where it says, "You shall not take vengeance on your brother. You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against your people. But you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." As Ray alluded to, this is the verse that Jesus is quoting whenever he's asked, how do you sum up the law and the prophets? But he only quotes the very end. But we should remember that when Jesus quotes the Old Testament, he's not just quoting a proof text, just a verse to pluck it out of it. It's the whole context matters. It's like when he was on the cross and Jesus says, my God, why have you forsaken me?" That isn't just a single line. It alludes to the entire Psalm 22, the entire ups and downs and the very end of the glory of God found in that psalm. It was a style of allusion. And so when Jesus is citing this passage, he isn't just citing love your neighbor as yourself. He is citing do not take vengeance or hold a grudge. It's a particular kind of love, a particular kind of way to begin. Take no vengeance. Love can look like a lot of things. But we must begin somewhere. We begin by not doing harm. We begin by not taking vengeance, and this is a radical thing. This means that when you are harmed, you don't return it, even if they deserve it. Simple to say, harder to do. Even harder, this means when you are harmed, you don't hold a grudge against the person. Because a grudge is really easy. You can hold a grudge and you don't have to tell anybody. It can just be inside of you and you can just keep it. And when you see that person, you can just smile and say, "Bless their hearts." And just move on. You don't have to tell a soul, but you have that grudge and it's your little grudge and you'll just pet it and let it grow. No! Jesus is saying, do not bear a grudge. It is much easier to do that. It's much easier to willfully ignore the existence of other people if it furthers your own interests. It's easier to not think about people if they just get in the way of what you really want to do. And the human heart tends in this direction. But God says to love your neighbor as yourself. Making love concrete is an incredible challenge. What we possess, though, to help us understand all of this, is love in the flesh of Jesus Christ. The amazing mystery of incarnation, the amazing mystery of the enfleshedness of God, that the God of past, present, and future, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saw fit to humble himself by becoming flesh and blood. As Paul wrote, Jesus, though he was in the form of God, did not regard equality with God as something to be exploited, but emptied himself, taking the form of a slave, being born of human likeness, and being found in human form, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross. We know what the end of love looks like. We know what the point of love looks like because we know what the cross looks like. We have seen the ultimate expression of love in Jesus Christ. There is no greater love than this, no greater sacrifice than this. All love is defined through this. We know the end. We know the goal. It is the love of God without restriction, without remainder, as revealed in the Son of God, Jesus Christ. In Hebrews, we see that it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom all things exist, in bringing many children to glory, should make the pioneer of their salvation perfect through sufferings, so that through death he might destroy the one who has power over death. We see in the Epistle of John that we know love by this, that he laid down his life for us. And we ought to lay down our lives for one another. How does God's love abide in anyone who has the world's goods and sees a brother or sister in need and yet refuses to help? Little children, let us love not in word or speech, but in truth and action. The general rules help us with this beginning, with what John compels us to do. They help us to put love into action by guiding us in how we should start. And the first general rule, as I've alluded to, is first, do no harm. There's a way to begin. The first thing to do not harm your neighbor. Do not bear a grudge. Do not act out against them. But the key to this is that you can't do it alone. You can't follow Jesus alone. You can't be a disciple alone. You can't love your neighbor alone. If you don't have any neighbors, you can't love anyone. If you go up into the hills and get away from everybody so because everybody bothers you, you can't love your neighbor anymore. You can't be a disciple alone. If you isolate yourself from others, you can't be a disciple. You don't have love. You don't have God, and you can isolate yourself from others and be in the middle of a metropolis. It doesn't take going off in the woods to isolate ourselves. All of us can tend in this direction, can react in this direction, can respond to challenge by shutting down, by shutting people out, by pretending they're not there. But in that, we are shutting out the possibility of love. But who is our neighbor? The disciples ask, we ask, we often ask, who is my neighbor? Wait a minute. Who do I have to love? When Jesus was asked this question, he told the parable of the Good Samaritan. We spoke of this a few weeks ago, but it reminded me of another way of talking about the neighbor. It's another definition of neighbor, because to regard someone as a neighbor, what that means is to preclude, to avoid any specific judgment, which signifies that they are expendable. To call someone a neighbor is to say that no assessment of weakness can ever lead you to ignore them. To call someone a neighbor is to say that whatever a person does in particular never in itself qualifies or disqualifies him from attention or care. A neighbor is someone you cannot dismiss. A neighbor is someone you cannot ignore. A neighbor is someone you cannot dehumanize. Love is sufficient in itself. Love of neighbor is sufficient in itself. A neighbor is someone you don't treat like an object. A neighbor is someone you don't treat like a tool for your own furtherance. A neighbor is someone whose humanity is not earned or lost. They are a child of God, whether they deserve it or not. Just because I am a child of God, whether I deserve it or not. And you are a child of God, whether you deserve it or not. A neighbor is someone whom you cannot pass by. Just as the Good Samaritan did not pass by the man wounded on the side of the road, he showed mercy. The priest and the Levite harmed the poor man by inaction. They harmed him by indifference. They harmed him because they did not consider the bleeding man on the side of the road a neighbor. He was an object to be dismissed rather than a person to be loved. And this kind of love is impossible on our own. It is impossible alone, and it is impossible apart from grace. It is impossible apart from mercy. It is impossible apart from each other. We must order our lives differently if we really think this kind of love matters. All our lives have an order, whether we're conscious of it or not. Priorities are similar, but different in a clarifying way. A priority is something you do before other things. A priority is something you do prior. And ordering is the entire structure of our lives, how it all fits together. All of the pieces fit together. How is your life put together? How can you begin if you want to reorder your life around love? We begin with God and Jesus Christ. We begin with that amazing love which died for us. We begin by acknowledging that apart from grace, we cannot fully love. That we are incomplete creations apart from the fullness of love. That while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. With that good news, we are in the place of the early Methodists. Hearing the preaching of John Wesley right before they go into the tin mine. And so we can respond to Christ's message of hope and forgiveness by just going about our business and hearing it and looking away and forgetting what it looks like. Or we can respond by actually living into it, by responding to God in truth and action. Doing this takes time and consistency. It takes relationships. It takes people in your life who know you better than you know yourself. It takes a great faith in God for the possibilities of what can happen in your life. With all that, it takes knowing where you are, knowing where you want to go, and knowing how to begin. Knowing where you are is the purpose of the Love, Serve, Praise devotionals. Ta-da! This is a hard copy. They're going to be, if you have the buzz on email, you'll receive the emails in the morning. They're hard copies for people who don't. Ginger Miller is going to have them after the service, and so if you would like one to take home, please see her. Each day consists of a brief scripture and space for reflection. It's really straightforward. It is an opportunity for you to be honest with yourself. It really is, the point of it is to try and each of us to discover where we are in these challenges, where we are in loving our neighbor. Where are you in loving your neighbor? Where am I in loving my neighbor? How am I doing? How am I measuring up to this? What else can I do? Knowing where you want to go is personal, but can also be straightforward. Knowing where we want to go is exactly how John Wesley defined a Methodist. Knowing where we want to go is to love the Lord our God with all our heart, our soul, and our mind, and to love our neighbor as ourselves. That is the goal. To be truly doing this thing called love. To be saying these words, I love you. And to truly know what they mean. To follow through. To act on it. To be doers of the word. And to not hearers only. And knowing how to begin is the first general rule. Do no harm. Sounds simple at first, and then you get cut off on your way home from church. And then someone takes the last bag of apples. You can't have any apples that week. And then someone drives in the mud, and it gets all over your outfit. First, do no harm.
Just begin there. And again, the great thing is, you're not alone. The point is not to be this amazing hero of moral fortitude, but to admit that you need God. To admit that by faith, all things are possible. By faith, even I don't have to hold a grudge. By faith, even I don't have to think badly of my neighbor, even if they did this, even if they did this, and this, and this, and this. Even when they park in front of my yard. By faith, we begin with the mundane in life. We build that foundation of love. And with that foundation of love, together with God, all things are possible. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.